Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. These are difficult times for urban education in many parts of the country. We'll be talking about problems and potential solutions on today's program, starting with a look at the current poster boy for district turmoil in this area. That would be the Normandy School District. It's facing serious issues on several fronts: funding problems, a state administrative takeover, the school transfer issue, and an emerging legal case. Joining me in studio to talk about Normandy and other relevant issues, St. Louis Public Radio education reporters Dale Singer and Tim Lloyd. Fellas, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Dale, I'll start with you. You've been on top of this Normandy situation. It's been an incredible week for the Normandy School District.
Very interesting week. I started the week on Tuesday in Columbia, where the State Board of Education met and decided that they were going to lapse the current Normandy School District at the end of June and replace it with a new entity, the Normandy Schools Collaborative, and that would have a state-appointed board. And all the contracts, all the teachers and everybody else are going to be lapsed at the end of June, and they have to kind of start all over. And this is going to be a massive job. They don't even know whether the district is going to be accredited when July 1st comes. So they don't know whether or not the students who live there will still be eligible to take part in the transfer program.
Boy, the outsider looking in, it doesn't look as if what's happening right now is making the situation better. In fact, it may be making it worse.
Well, it certainly isn't making it any clearer. Yeah. I mean, then on Wednesday, Normandy, which had hinted all during the school year that they had a secret legal strategy in their pocket that they may go ahead and use, decided to file suit. They challenged the transfer law itself. They challenged what the state did. And they wanted to get immediate injunctive relief to stop what was going on.
Any timetable on that?
No, I checked yesterday. There was nothing that had been set or anything like that. On Thursday, the State Department of Education, which had taken over the district's finances earlier this year, said, well, we can't stop you from suing, but we control the money, and we're not going to give you any money to pursue the suit.
Well, stay tuned. I mean, right. Obviously, a lot's going to happen in the next couple of weeks.
And then on Friday, we can't dismiss that on Friday, right before the holiday weekend, which is when government officials sometimes like to put out news that they don't necessarily like to want to attract a lot of attention. Governor Nixon just said he would veto the large, wide-ranging school transfer bill that the legislature passed in the last week of its session, and he singled out the one part of the bill that everybody had wondered about, which was the option for transfer students to go to non-sectarian private schools. He said that was not a good thing, not a good way to use public money. So now nobody knows whether the legislature is going to try to override it, if they want to try, whether they'll be able to. The Senate passed it with plenty of votes to spare, but not the House. And it's just everything is in limbo.
Tim, what's your take on all of this? I know you watch community reaction to issues such as these, and I know you've been active in covering the Riverview Gardens. What's the impact of all of this in those areas?
Well, I mean, everything Dale laid out just creates this climate of uncertainty, both from an administrative standpoint, but also from a family standpoint. I spent some time, we ran a story last week based on some time I spent with this family that had decided, who lives in Normandy, had decided to keep one child in that district, but also decided to drive the other child to the Maplewood-Richmond Heights district. And, you know, for families like that who have spent a lot of time, it's been a tough year for them, they're going into the summer going, well, what's going to happen? And I think it's just that climate of uncertainty as far as the individual community members are concerned that is really the takeaway.
What are the implications of this elsewhere, or are there any?
As far as the transfer law is concerned?
Yeah, the whole kit.
Well, I mean, I think the next major issue is what's going to happen in Riverview Gardens with finances. We've right. seen what this has done to the Normandy School District. Well, Riverview Gardens might be in the same position next year if nothing changes.
Riverview Gardens already has a special administrative board.
Correct.
Is that correct? Do we know anything about that, about what it's done or what it wants to do?
I talked with Lynn Beckwith, who's the head of that board, and he said, "You can try to change the climate. You can try to change the way things are done. All the contracts lapsed there, and all the teachers had to reapply for their jobs. And I think about 2/3 of them stayed at least the first year, but their test scores haven't shown any marked improvement. And you know, to talk a little bit more about your major question. What happens next is not necessarily just Riverview Gardens. It's all the, it's that whole area up there. I mean, the St. Louis City, Jennings, University City, their test scores, Ferguson Florissant, their test scores were all in the first year of the latest school improvement plan. They were all in the area that could be slipping either from provisional accreditation or into a lack of accreditation. And there's been a lot of talk about a domino effect of what's going to happen next. I mean, if the city of St. Louis, for instance, which had been unaccredited, regained provisional accreditation, but their scores last year were very low. If those scores are low for 2 or 3 years, which is the number of years of data that the state says they have to have, if they lose accreditation again and the transfer law is the way it is now, stands the way it's been for this past year, there have been estimates that as many as 15,000 students could be leaving St. Louis City and transferring to districts in the county.
And here we go again. Tim, of course, the city is run, administered now by a special administrative board. I guess if St. Louis City is in the predicament that Dale just indicated, it doesn't bode well for the abilities of special boards to turn things around.
Well, I think it's a fair point, and it's something that sort of has sat out on the horizon, like Dale had mentioned, for some of these districts that are scoring in the provisionally accredited range. They could perhaps slip into the unaccredited range, and it's a big question mark. What happens, you know, if there's sort of this domino effect with all these districts, including St. Louis Public, if it were to become unaccredited, what happens next? What does that mean for the whole region? There's a lot of questions.
I saw something in one of the stories the other day. It might have been one of yours, Dale, concerning University City. I had not heard this before, but is in University City in some sort of difficulty with regard to accreditation?
Their scores are about the same as Ferguson Florissant and maybe Jennings. You have to have 70% of the possible points on the annual performance review before you can get full accreditation. And I think they scored in the somewhere in the 60s. So again, they're going to take 3 years of data before they make any formal recommendation for a change in status. But yeah, they're in somewhat questionable territory.
So this domino effect that you're talking about, when you really peel the onion a little bit and look at what's going on, I mean, what's going on right now could have tremendous impact on this entire region.
Absolutely. I mean, people are talking about, you know, what's going to happen. One of the things that people have always complained about, that what was unfair to Normandy, is when they lapsed the Wellston School District a few years ago, they attached Wellston to Normandy. Well, you know, Wellston was doing poorly. Normandy was doing a little bit better. And they've always said it's not the Wellston students that brought them down. But the question was, why would they take a failed district, which I guess has to be the definition of Normandy, and attach it to a questionable district, which is failed district, Wellston, and attach it to Normandy?
The inference being that the Wellston students have brought the test scores down.
Certainly didn't help.
Yeah. Yeah. What and you may not know this, Tim Lloyd, but what about Ty McNichols? He hasn't been on the job a year yet, I don't think, and he's trying to balance some balls over which he has no control.
Right. I mean, he took this job. He's a first-time superintendent, it should be noted as well. He took this job just weeks before the Missouri State Supreme Court upheld the transfer law. And so, you know, it's been a bit of trial by fire, I think, for him. And he doesn't know where his contract stands right now. It could be discontinued when the district is formally lapsed at the end of June.
And you've got all these teachers that their contracts will be voided, I guess, or just simply stopped. Dale, you indicated as many as 35% of them in Normandy. I mean, where do they go? What are their options?
Well, it's not only a question where do they go. The question is, what good teachers at this stage of the school year don't have a contract for next year? I mean, it's pretty late. Usually school teacher contracts go out in the spring, and most people who have jobs or want to get jobs, their situation is pretty much settled now. But if you've got to replace dozens, maybe even more, teachers for a new Normandy school collaborative, where are they going to come from?
Yeah. First, I'll start with you on this, Tim, and then turn to Dale. Do you see anything on the horizon that would indicate that some of these things could really be addressed seriously? I mean, we talk about legislature, a special session. They've had a couple of cracks at it for a couple of years now. Are you seeing anything or hearing anything that could really turn the kettle upside down and try to start from square one with all of this?
Well, I think that the part of what could have happened would have been if that so-called transfer fix bill would have been signed into law by the governor. I think that that would have sort of, at least it was based on the premise that it would rein in the student transfer issue. But right now, no. I mean, it's a lot of question marks. I mean, that's really where things are at right now.
Dale, is it only the specter of vouchers with regard to this funding for non-sectarian schools that caused the governor to, or will cause the governor to veto it?
That's what he cited. The people who were in favor of the bill say, even though they may not like that particular provision, it's the way the legislature works, that people give to get. They were willing to give to that and put restrictions on it. The the school districts that would send students to non-sectarian private schools, voters had to approve it. It was only for local money. The private school had to be in that particular district. So it was restricted, but it was the concept that the governor didn't like. There were a lot of different things in the bill. One of the things that Chris Nicastro, the commissioner of education, has said many times over this past school year is that if anything good has come out of this transfer mess, it's that people are taking a good hard look and having long, serious conversations about school choice, about school reconstitution, about school problems. But where the action is going to come from to fix any of those is hard to say.
Well, we do have a timeline. July 1st, I guess, is an important date because that's when this special entity is going to take over the Normandy district.
Right.
Right. We don't know a timeline yet for the legal case. They can drag on.
We don't
on.
Know that when that's going to happen, and we don't know a lot of things. And I guess before the July 1st date is the June 16th date for the next meeting of the State Board of Education when a lot of these things are supposed to be cleared up.
All right. Tim, final thought?
Lots of questions. This is why we do this, right?
That's why we've got two education reporters on this. Right. You know, you could probably use some help with all that's going on right now. Tim Lloyd, Dale Singer, thanks so much for being with us and bringing us up to speed on an issue that I think is confusing to a lot of people, upsetting to a lot of people as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
And we're going to be continuing our conversation on education and current issues in the education field in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We are continuing our conversation about problems facing urban education in general and the situation in Normandy and Riverview Gardens, the unaccredited districts currently in the eye of the storm as a flurry of events concerning Normandy in particular are taking place. Just to review, Governor Nixon has vetoed the school transfer bill just passed by the legislature. He's about to veto it, I should say. Normandy is suing to have the courts take another look at the transfer case in which unaccredited districts must pay costs for students transferring to accredited districts. Normandy's district will be managed by a special entity appointed by the state as of July 1st. Joining me in studio is Cara Basile, Dean of the School of Education at the University of Missouri-St. Louis. She headed the task force that recommended turning over the Normandy district to that special entity answerable to the State Board of Education. Also with us is Greendale Mayor Monica Huddleston. Greendale is in the Normandy School District. Ladies, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm almost breathless having listened to our two reporters talk about what's going on. And Carol, you just indicated off mic, so are we. Where, Carol, do you think all of this is headed?
Well, there's a lot of big decisions that have to be made in the next 2 months. What we know is school's going to start in August, mid-August, and everything's got to be in place. Teachers have to be in place. Leaders have to be in place. And kids need to learn. So I think that's where we're headed, is figuring out what do we do short term, then what do we do long term to make sure that governance structures are in place, that people are accountable, that we have benchmarks in place, that we know what we're going to do. So kids can really hit the ground running in 2 months.
But it looks like they'll be facing a much smaller staff, the way things are working with the teachers there.
I think it depends on what happens with the financial part of this, and I think that is the big unknown right now. I think that the department is really trying to figure that out. That's their first priority right now, is to say, okay, how do we take a look with the district on the finances and figuring out what can we do and what can't we do this year, and how do we begin to spread money across the year, because we know we've got local tax dollars that are gone.
You're part of that task force that, or the head of the task force that made the various recommendations, most of which have been followed, resulting in much of this. What can this special entity, this special board, accomplish? Do you think that could couldn't be accomplished by the current board?
Well, I think that it will be very interesting because it's. I think we've been very careful about making it a joint board so that there was still consistency and some you know, people who were on the elected board that are now part of this board to have some influence.
No one's been named to the board yet, have
nobody,
they?
Nobody has been named yet.
Okay.
But that's going to happen here, I think, shortly. Mm. And I think that what this board, I think, will be able to do is that they will report directly to the state board. And I think it's a matter of accountability, of creating benchmarks, of holding people very accountable for what's happening in these schools.
And the superintendent, Ty McNichols, is he out of a job?
Don't know.
Okay. Monica Huddleston, you're watching all of this, and I'm sure with a great deal of concern. What's your take on it, the community concern, watching all of this happen?
Well, the community has been concerned for a number of years about the Normandy School District and what has or has not happened there. As you know, this has been going on for a number of years with the provisional accreditation, and a lot of work has needed to be done. Been several superintendents over a short period of time, in my view anyway. And so there's not a lot of opportunity, or hasn't been, to really jump in and get some things done consistently, because things have kind of been upset every few years by a new administration coming in. And I think with this going forward, the new Normandy Schools Collaborative, as it will be called, it does give us an opportunity to hit the reset button, to start this over, and to try to do the right thing by the 3,000 to 4,000 children that we have. My city has just under 700 people. We have over 40,000 people in the Normandy footprint, in the 24 municipalities that reside there. And all of the taxpaying residents there and all of the children who live there deserve a high quality, functioning, accredited district. Period. And that's what this new situation is going to have to deliver for us.
So what has to happen when you hit that reset button? From your point of view, what has to happen?
Well, there have to be some very good and effective and efficient and caring people as a part of that joint executive governing board. They have to have the skill sets required. They have to have the concern for the community. They have to have the will. And they certainly have to have, I don't know a better word to use, the guts to tackle this thing head on and do whatever has to be done to pull this district into the type of activity that it needs to have to affect a good education for our children.
Are you saying that the skill sets have not been in place with the administration and the board that has existed up to this point?
I am not saying that at all. I know those people, and I know how hard the current board has worked over the years to improve this district. They have done many things that were good, and they've done things that they thought were right. There were improvements in a lot of areas, but then there were not improvements in other areas. So I can't, there's plenty of fault and blame to go around with this thing. Everyone from elected officials who perhaps didn't demand enough to the board, to the teachers, to the administrators, we can all pick up a piece of this problem. Now what we have to do is concentrate on the positive side of how to fix it going forward. That is so much more important than what's been going on. What's been going on is tough. I agree with that. And of course, it has upset people. But if we're going to be upset, we need to be upset toward how do we fix this. We've got to fix it.
Hey, Carol, put on your academics hat for a moment, which you'd never take off, I'm sure. But look at this from really as an academic. What are you seeing from that angle that perhaps other people might be missing?
Well, I think that, first of all, you got to look nationally and see what's going on with urban schools nationally. Nobody has figured out how to solve this. If we had figured it out and there was a solution, that's what we would be doing. Nobody has done that. However, there are, I think, some really good things that are happening. We're seeing them in small pockets of large districts. We're seeing them in some small school districts nationally where people have said, you know, we can't build a better name your suburban school. We've got to do something in an urban school district that is different, and we've got to figure out what that is. And I think that's the opportunity here, from both a practical and an academic perspective, is to say, look, this is a unique opportunity. We understand this is precedent setting. Whatever we do here is precedent setting. How do we decide what a new entity means? Because it doesn't just mean a new school board and new teachers and new leaders. It has to mean something else. There has to be some other criteria to that. And we have to start thinking about what's real innovation. So we've got to look around. We've got to look nationally and say, what are the pieces that are working for kids in urban communities? Because we understand that there's a lot of issues that others don't have. So this is an opportunity for us to really take a look at what's going on and bring those pieces to this community as well.
Is the issue really money? It seems to me that the districts that face the biggest threat are generally districts that are less affluent than others.
So in some ways it is money, and in some ways it's how do you spend the dollars and the kinds of things
money,
that you need to spend
the
dollars. But go ahead.
No, I was thinking really of the populations of these districts as
right.
opposed to money coming in from someplace else. Poor people seem to be the ones in these districts that are getting the short end of the stick.
Absolutely.
That is a true statement, and it is a true statement because of the fact that when you have families who don't have the same resources as certain middle-class families do, don't have the same level of education, don't have the jobs, don't. I mean, if you can look at the lack of health care insurance and all these other things that make for a healthy, whole human being, a healthy, whole child to come to school and be ready to learn, when those things are missing, it's going to be very difficult to educate a child. That's why you saw in the recommendations that our transition task force put together that the wraparound services that reach out to the families and the parents to get them more involved, get them access to what they need to survive as families and children was such a huge part of what we recommended because you've got to address the whole child.
Well, Normandy is doing something like this that other districts aren't with, I know, Chris Kramer, Beyond Housing, and what is it, Vision 24, is that?
24-1.
Yeah. Is that having an impact?
Of course it's having an impact. These things do take time. There are collaborations in place that were not in place as early as 3 or 4 years ago when all of this really kind of got started and pulled together. There's been new housing erected in a lot of these communities. There have been financing programs to allow people to become more stable and be in a home ownership environment. There has been healthcare collaboratives. There have been all kinds of things done that were not done before, but a lot more has to be done, and it's going to take more time to get it done.
Carol, a lot's been done, but look where we are.
Right.
With all that's been done, we're still in this fix.
And some of it is we need a better structure, and I think that's part of what the task force took on was to say, how do we formalize this? You're sitting next to, Normandy in particular, sitting next to a major university. You have Beyond Housing and the 24-1 piece working, but those pieces have not been strategically part of the district plan or structure or governance structure. And I think that's a piece that is really very different about this, was how to formalize that to make sure that whatever we talk about pillars in the plan, that whatever those pillars are that are happening in schools, whether it's caring and respecting culture, whether or not it's learning by doing, career and workforce readiness, that those things are also happening in the community, that we're sending the same messages, that it's coordinated in a better way.
Is it time to consider unscrambling the egg, if you will, and kind of looking at the way our school district system is set up? Maybe, you know, I'm just throwing this out there. One big district, five big districts, as opposed to, what do we have, 64 or something like that, whatever the number is.
I think it's time to start looking at a lot of things. I think it's time to start looking at the egg carton model of classrooms and schooling. I think, is it okay?
What is that, the egg carton model?
Yeah, we talk about the egg carton model of schooling where you've got one teacher and 25 kids, and that teacher is with those kids all year long. Is that the best use of expertise? Is that the best use of how we address the issues that kids have? So is even internal to a school, is that the best model, let alone the way school districts are, you know, arranged and structured, let alone the bigger picture of do we need to have all of these different school districts?
How did we get here? How did we get to this point? It seemed to be in the days gone by, it was much simpler, much better organized, and kids got educated, and we weren't in the kind of fixes we're seeing all over the country today.
I'm not sure that it's changed. I think we're paying more attention to urban kids living in poverty today. And I think there's been more attention drawn to it. I think these problems have probably always existed. I mean, here we are celebrating, you know, a couple weeks ago, Brown versus Board of Education. Mm-hmm. 60 years of this. Poverty and kids and schools, we've had these problems for a very long time in terms of every kid getting access. I think we're paying a lot more attention to it today. I think that's probably a good thing.
And 60 years after Brown versus Brown Board of Education ruling, there are still de facto segregated schools in this country, and not too far from where we're sitting right now. Well, we have a couple of callers who want to get into the conversation. Monica, I know you have to leave fairly soon, so let's get them in before you go. We'll start with Tina calling from Maplewood. Go ahead, Tina.
Hi. I taught in the St. Louis Public Schools and Riverview Gardens and Normandy School Districts in the past 10 years. And one thing I noticed is that the teachers, there are so many students in those school districts that have special needs, you know, whether it be conflict resolution strategies or whatever, that the teacher has to spend so much time dealing with these kind of problems that they spend more time with that, it seems like, than with the actual education. So one of the things that I've thought about that would help would be to have two teachers in every classroom, and that way you have one teacher who can deal with, you know, an argument that might break out, and while the other teacher continues to teach. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many these school districts are like two grade levels behind. And I have a solution for that, and that is to employ the veterans coming home from the wars in the classrooms and keep them on the government payroll because the schools can't afford, you know, to hire up more teachers. And you know, this way, that you solve two problems there. You give a job to the veterans, which is something meaningful for them, that they can still be in service to their country, and then you help these struggling school districts.
Carol, thank you so much for the call. Well, the dollar sign raises its specter here, even whether the government's paying for it or not. Thoughts, Monica, I'll start with you as you get ready to leave.
Well, her point is very well taken about the problems that exist outside of the classroom that are brought into the classroom by the children who are in challenged surroundings, which is why the entire community has to rally around the parents and the families so that we can try to mitigate some of those issues and problems. The counseling, the health care, the financial aspect, the job training, and then the ability to get a job, the fact that there aren't many jobs for unskilled people and things. Those are the things that have to be tackled here, because I think we know that in environments where those challenges do not exist, the child has a lot better opportunity to learn, and they learn better, and they score better on tests, and they do better as individuals, period.
Carol, is this part of the innovative process, the suggestion that we just had here?
We actually have talked about both parent liaisons and academic liaisons, not necessarily in each class, but certainly having them in school so that there are people who are available to help and to work with parents and then also coach teachers on how to handle some of these kinds of issues, particularly kids that do have significant special needs.
Yeah. We have an email from Cassie in Greendale. Maybe you know Cassie,
Monica,
who writes, I've been a tax-paying homeowner in Greendale for 20 years and love my neighborhood. I have a 5-year-old son starting kindergarten next year. The transfers are an answered prayer for my husband and me. We are more than happy to provide transportation to and from school for our son. I've emailed my state reps and the governor stating such. We are hopeful that we can send our son to a safe, functional school. Is it coming to this, Monica, where the parents are going to have to be providing the transportation, et cetera?
Hi, Cassie, and I understand completely her concern, and the Transition Task Force talked about that also and talked about the importance of parents still having the choice to be able to send their children to other schools if that's what they choose to do. But that whole transfer thing is simply out of our hands. We really don't know what the situation is going to be. That is really a state decision that's going to have to be made.
All right. Any thoughts, Carol, from you on that? Let's take one more phone call before Monica has to go. Barbara Ann in Town and Country, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Normandy for 2 years, and a lot of the youth that I had came in with some baggage, and I understood that, and so I tried to use a lot of positive reinforcement. But one of the things that I didn't see at that time, and I would like to have your guests maybe talk about this, is more of a continuum of services. Like youth before, you know, have them prepared before they get to the kindergarten, but maybe parents as teachers. And then they come in, and if they're behind in certain areas, then you have an assistant teacher work with them and have the other, you know, maybe a veteran teacher, you know, take over the entire classroom. I kind of like that idea. But I'd like to see more of a continuum of services and maybe even more services for parents. So that's just my thought.
All right. Thanks for the call. Carol?
So one of the things that we talked about was also in the Normandy Reformation Plan was this idea of transitional classrooms, that as kids come in, we know that the mobility rate in Normandy and a lot of these school districts is incredibly high. Kids are coming and going constantly. And how do you bring kids in and have them acclimate to the culture and a culture of caring respect that you're trying to build when they haven't come from that particular kind of culture? So we have talked about, and we wrote in this notion of transitional classrooms. Obviously, the details and you know, the devil's in the detail in all of this, but we have given some consideration to that, and how do we give that kind of service? And again, as we talked about, parallel processes of what happens in school is what the community and a collective impact organization like a Beyond Housing begins to do out in the community to send those kinds of messages, so that it's not just what kids are learning in school, it's also what's happening in the community and how we begin to provide educational structures for the community, for parents as well.
We also talked about early childhood education being a huge piece of this and how that needs to be mandatory. It needs to be mandatory throughout the entire state.
And funded.
And funded.
But
and our legislature has to deal with
right.
that.
Right. Well, I was going to say, it's not happening.
That's right. But that's important, because the kids who have come into the Normandy schools in kindergarten are well behind already when they get to kindergarten. They haven't heard enough vocabulary. They haven't been exposed to enough. And a good, solid, quality early childhood education situation in our Normandy footprint would help that situation going forward.
We've heard this so often, and we've done many programs on this subject, and yet it still doesn't happen, although there seems to be a very definite cry out there for this to happen.
Absolutely.
It's a finger pointed at the legislature.
And data to prove that it works.
Right. I know you have to go, Monica Huddleston. We'll take a break now to allow you to get out of here without knocking down the door. But thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And good luck to you and all your folks out there in Greenwood and in the Normandy School
Greendale, District. Greendale. And we'll keep fighting, believe me.
I'm sure you will. Thank you so much. We'll be back in just a moment to continue our conversation. Staying with us will be Carol Basile, who is the Dean of Education at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We'll take more of your calls as well. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on issues facing education in our region in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. As we've been discussing, the Normandy School Board is meeting tonight for the first time since the state voted to lapse the unaccredited district. It will reopen in July under a different name and under an appointed school board. And the Illinois Senate is debating the state's $35 billion budget plan today. Meanwhile, the House is considering a number of resolutions, including a proposed ballot referendum, on the Equal Rights Amendment and another on nuclear energy policy. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our continuing conversation on education. Still with me in studio is Carol Basile, Dean of the School of Education at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Carol, I'm going to go back to an emailer here, because we were talking earlier with you with regard to the need for innovation and rethinking things, perhaps. Karen in University City writes, "It seems to me completely obvious that the problem with funding education is that the money comes from property taxes. I thought that there had been a U.S. Supreme Court ruling making this illegal several years ago. Why can't we find a better funding mechanism that would even cut the spending and give the money to the districts that need it?"
So that's a good question. I don't have an answer for that.
Even out the spending is what she, I misread.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have an answer for it. I mean, I think that's what every state wrestles with. I think that's what, you know, districts wrestle with. I think if you look at even Normandy, though, and you look at their per pupil, you know, cost, what they're bringing in their revenue, it's not at the bottom of the pack. I mean, they're in the top third. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it isn't that they're getting a lot less money. It's how do you spend the money? And then I look at other states, and there are a lot of states and a lot of school districts that are doing with a lot less than what we've got here. So it's a constant issue. And then we look at issues of poverty, and we look at what kids need, and that's where the difference comes in, that they need so much more. And that's where you need more dollars.
We did a program the other day on the transition from high school to college. And one of our guests was Dr. David Russell, the Missouri Commissioner of Higher Education. And I raised the issue with him about private investment becoming a part of our education picture in this country. Very briefly, here's what he said about that.
I personally think so, because the handwriting's on the wall. Government is no longer able to step in and provide all of the resources that our citizens need to get where they want to go. You have to have those kinds of partnerships and liaisons with the private sector if you're going to be successful.
I wanted to play that for you, Carol, in particular, again, putting on your academic hat. Is this where we're going? I mean, are we going to have to rely on corporations and whatever money could be out there to fund our education?
I think we have to be... I think the answer is probably yes. I think we just have to be very careful with that answer, because I think, you know, are we also talking about privatizing? That's a whole different conversation. And as opposed to maintaining public status and bringing in private dollars. And I think that's where everybody is. I mean, I think that's, you know, we look at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Our state funding decreases, and you know, we're now, you know, state, we kid that we're state located. But we're, you know, much of that is decreasing. And so we are going to have to look to private dollars to backfill some of what we've had in the past. Or we need to figure out very clearly that we're going to do something very differently.
You know, as you well know, Governor Nixon has promised to veto the transfer legislation. And his biggest concern was the part of that particular legislation which would fund transfers to private non-sectarian schools. People are concerned that this is the first stage in a voucher system. Do you share that concern?
Do a little bit. I think that I just think we have to be careful that we're not robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, we're pushing money around, and does that make sense, instead of building a better system? And I think until we really have a conversation about what school systems should look like and making sure that every school system is a good school system. I mean, I go back to the email that Monica responded to from the person in Greendale. And the fact is, we got to build a better school system so that, you know, she's not looking to transfer her son or daughter or whatever.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. And before I do that, I just wanted to raise the issue of Common Core, which is also something that the legislature considered this year, the Common Core curriculum. Your thoughts about that? Is this another area in which we're going as a country?
Well, I think we are. I think we have been. I mean, I think what people have to realize about Common Core is that Common Core is another set of standards. And if we're going to, and we've had standards for many, many years, and all the national organizations, the National Council for Teachers of Mathematics and Social Studies, we've had sets of standards for a very long time in trying to raise the bar and raise benchmarks for kids. And every state has had standards. Common Core is another set of standards to help us to try to give teachers and leaders direction for what kids need to know and be able to do. So on one side, if we keep saying we want to raise expectations and we want kids to be able to problem solve and critical thinking and the kinds of things that companies say, employers say that they want kids to be able to do, we need high standards, and I think that's what Common Core does for us.
Okay, I'm going back to the private school issue now because Scott in Chesterfield wants to talk about that, so let's bring him in. Scott, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, I think the NERP did a study that said that private schools do not outperform public schools when you account for class and race. And, you know, I mean, you got homeless kids, you got kids in foster care, abused kids, abandoned babies. I mean, drug addicted parents. You got single parent family. You know, the single parent has to work all the time and can't afford a babysitter. You know, the problem is, and you know, and then some of your callers offered solutions like hiring veterans. That's going to take money. This state legislature is cheap, and they're cutting taxes. And even though Missouri is a low-tax state, and, you know, the solution, it just depends on who's going to vote this November. That's what it depends on.
What is the solution, and what is the NERP?
Well, it's like some national education group. You know, you can search it, put it in a search engine, but...
Well, can't do that right now, Scott. But the solution is what?
I think the solution is to get the Republicans out of the state legislature. These Republicans up there are cheap, they're ignorant, and it's because a lot of voters don't think that midterm elections are important, and, you know, so you got the Koch brothers running the state of Missouri.
Okay, Scott, thanks so much for your call. Well, that is up to the individual voter to deal with that, and that's why we do programs like this, so folks can learn about the issues and then vote intelligently. We hope that's the case, in fact. You agreed, Carol?
Agreed.
All right. Back to the phones. Christina in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. My name is Christina. I am a newly trained school psychologist, and previously I was a special education teacher. So I've had experiences in Maplewood, U City, Rockwood, Webster Groves. And I think what I've really seen, the major thing that separates a lot of these districts in terms of being successful, is their amount of intervention in different areas. I think somebody was talking about that spectrum of interventions of services for kids. You know, when I worked in some of the more affluent districts, I see, you know, reading groups and pull-out services for kids when they're struggling. And in a lot of these poor districts, they're just not getting those types of services. And especially school psychologists in particular are trained to give these types of interventions or social-emotional interventions, mental health interventions, and academic interventions, you know, as well as, you know, group change and organizational change. And I think that's kind of those types of services that a lot of these schools are missing. When I look at our area in St. Louis and I compare it to other school psychologists that I've talked to across the state or across the country, I think the way that we're utilizing those services is just not efficient or effective, especially in our schools that are struggling or schools that don't have the types of monetary supports that other districts do.
Christina, let's get some comment on that. Thank you for it. And Carol Basile, this is not something that's new. We hear this a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we really,
yeah,
there is, that's,
I, well, I
that's
think,
the difference.
I always say, you know, every kid needs a team. It's not just about one person. It's not about a mentor. It's not about a parent. It is about a team of people. All of our kids who have special needs and who are dealing with lots of different issues, we go out and we build a team around them. We make sure they have their therapist and their doctors, and they've got their after school programs, and they've got coaches, and they've got, every kid needs a team of people paying attention to what their needs are. And we also have to pay attention to those kids. We've talked a little bit about, you know, the notion of collective impact in the city of St. Louis, and what does that really mean? And what is it, what kind of data do we really need to be able to understand the needs of all of these kids? And I have said, you know, every kid needs a Carfax. We need to know whether, you know, are you in an after school program? Mm-hmm. We need to know when you went to the doctor. We went, all those kinds of things. But I think she's right. And I think those are the kinds of services and the kind of expertise that we need to build around kids to think about those teams.
And in poorer districts, I assume the team is a lot smaller and a lot less whatever.
Well, you got more kids with needs.
Right, more,
so
sure.
It may be the same. It may be the same number, but you've got, you know, you've got more kids who are suffering from lots of different, you know,
maybe overworked.
Lots of things.
Sure.
Overworked.
Back to the phones. I hope I have this name pronounced correctly. It's Piaki in Normandy. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you got it right, Don.
Go ahead.
You know, I've lived in the Normandy district for 45 years, and I've seen everything, and then I've followed education especially as it applies to African Americans. Children, and I've seen everything. And, you know, I think the solution is choice, full choice, which includes voucher. And another point, you have to look at the building rather than the district itself. In Kansas City, Don, you had some schools where they ranked in the top six academically in Missouri, one being the Chick school system, and they end up closing the school here a couple of years ago. So there's so much politics involved in this present public system. I think it needs to be done away with, and we need to come up with something else, which includes the local concerns, their parents, and the stakeholders. Please, we have to do this.
Thank you so much for the call. Well, that's what you've been saying. I mean, we have to kind of reevaluate everything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we talk about choice. We talked about choice, you know, as a task force quite a bit. And I think we have to make sure that we're defining choice well. So choice isn't all about charters and vouchers. There can be choice within the school district. We've talked about, you know, do we do K-8? Do we have a year-round school model? Are there a variety of curriculum choices for students? Even in small school districts, all of that's possible.
And it's a political hot potato. Back to the phones. Tom in Edwardsville, go ahead. Tom, with
us? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, but make it fast, Tom, if you would. We're running out of time.
Absolutely. I think the best way to understand a problem with the system is to think about the system holistically. And education is one of those systems where we have so many different things impacting it. I've heard callers suggest that we employ veterans and that we maybe change the political party that's currently in power in Missouri. But my point is maybe that's not the underlying issue here. Maybe the underlying issue has to do with these families that are struggling to get out of poverty. And that, of course, affects the district itself and the quality of education you can provide. But at the end of the day, how are we going to help these families get out of poverty and into the middle class?
Tom, thanks so much for the call. I think Monica addressed that, and I know you have too, Carol. I mean, that's the key. That's really
Absolutely.
The source of right. so many of the problems that we have. Tom, I think there's agreement that you're probably right. I'm going to try to squeeze another one in very, very quickly here if I can find it. Tom in Creve Coeur, it has to be really fast.
Okay, it'll be fast. First, I want to commend your guest for noting that the amount of funding is not the doesn't always square with results. I think that's important. But my main question for you is, both President Obama and people generally are very much in support of early childhood education. I sit on the board of a charter school. We have it. But there's been research recently that shows that the effects are very positive for the first few years, but by the time kids are in fifth and sixth grades, there's really no lasting there's no lasting benefit. Could you speak to that, please?
My kid had early childhood care, and most others, you know, that have done well in school have had some kind of early childhood. You know, I think there's probably just as much literature that would say there is long-term impact and effect.
Yeah, all of the studies that we've seen recently concerning that early education.
No question.
That doesn't seem to be any question about it. Any final thought you want to leave us with, Carol Basu?
No, we have to make this happen. I think we can. I think we understand that this is precedent setting. I think we've got to make sure we get this right.
And there needs to be a political will to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, Carol Basile, thank you so much.
Thank
Carol
you.
Carol is the Dean of the School of Education at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We also thank Monica Huddleston, the mayor of Greendale, who was with us earlier, as was Dale Singer and Tim Lloyd, St. Louis Public Radio education reporters. Thanks to all of them for being with us today, and thank you as well, folks. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape when he'll talk about Circus Flora's 2014 production, The Pawn, and also about Sing for Siteman, a concert by Opera Theater of St. Louis Singers to benefit Siteman Cancer Center. He'll also discuss Bosnian Born, a new art exhibit highlighting the work of Bosnian artists, which will open at Fontbonne University. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with military historian, author, and St. Louis native John McManus about his new book on World War II's D-Day, and with the director of a film by the same name that's now showing at the Science Center. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Camille Phillips, Kyle Jacoby, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.